Welcome to Entrepreneur Eats, a conversation about business and community with a side of eats. My name is Deanna Smith, and I'm your host. Hi, good morning. This is Deanna Smith, and this is Entrepreneur Eats. And I am here with Brian Murphy, who does Murphy's Fine Woodworking here in Escondido. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Deanna. It's so nice to be here.
It's such a pleasure to have you. I can't wait to hear about your story, and you've got a lot to share.
So. I do. I've been here for a long time. Our house just turned 50 years old.
Wow. Congratulations, house.
1973.
Ooh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so it's been fun.
What got you started in woodworking?
Probably the easiest way to explain that is in today's economy, people flip houses.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 50s, my dad was a house flipper.
Wow.
And he would buy houses, we would fix them up, and he would sell them.
So back then they didn't call them house flippers.
No.
Did they call them something?
Entrepreneurs.
Okay. I like that.
I like that too.
Much better than house flippers.
Well, today it's big business. Back there, it was a fun education because I got to learn about hammers and saws and paneling and putting stuff down and fixing things. And there were two or three furniture projects, which at that time were repairs, not creative. And so my dad is the guy that started the whole thing.
What's your dad's name?
Henry.
Henry.
Henry Francis Murphy.
All right.
He was, as the years went by, he was director of civilian personnel for 15th Air Force. He had like 20,000 people that were under him. So.
Sounds like a big job.
It was a really big job. Mm-hmm. Really big job. He enjoyed it. He was a real, true, hands-on type of guy. And he'd always look you square in the eye.
That's important.
Yes, it is. We had a big family, and I sat to his left at the dinner table, and I had two sisters, my aunt, uncle, grandfather, mom, and dad.
Mm.
And my sister was a true activist during the Vietnam project, and we had disagreements because at times I was in the Air Force, and my dad had an easy way of settling all table arguments.
Was it arm wrestling?
No, it was easier than that. He would look at me and we're Irish, okay? He doesn't speak with an Irish brogue, but when he was upset, he'd go, "Brian, the back of my hand you're going to be getting and the rest of my arm will be following it. Oh. Apologize to your sister."
Well, that's much faster than an arm wrestle.
Yes, it is. Yes, it was. Both my wife and I have been involved in the chamber since 2004. I was chairman in 2019-20. My wife, Nancy, who worked for Don Zeck, which is CDC Commercial, was president of the Ambassadors twice.
Yeah.
And, we have enjoyed our relationship with the Chamber. It's been very important to us as a businessman. The advertising that the Chamber does for me and for my business and for other businesses within the community has always been really important to us. As a company, Murphy's Fine Woodworking, through the years, we have grown. And at one time, we employed five people. We developed a company called American Furniture Design. And it was actually just a challenge because I had a commission from a gal over in Carlsbad. And I was stumbling around with it, just couldn't get it right. And Nancy says, "Well, why don't you have some plans to fix it?" And I says, "Well, there's none available." And that was the birth of American Furniture Design. Over the next 25 years, we grew it to be the third largest woodworking plan company in the United States.
Wow.
Based out of Escondido.
That is amazing.
Yeah, really.
Now, just to give us some perspective, how many other furniture companies were there in the United States and in let's just say, Southern California at the time?
I was the only one in California. There were five at that particular time. And Matter of fact, Better Homes and Gardens produces a product called Wood Magazine. Mm-hmm. Better Homes and Gardens is huge.
Okay, yes, and definitely.
So I was third, they were first.
Wow.
Because you can appreciate the volume and the advertising mechanism that they had in comparison to ours. This is just woodworking plants. This mm-hmm. is your paper merchant.
Okay.
We worked with a huge printing company in San Diego, one mm-hmm. in Carlsbad. First of all, we designed the product.
Okay.
And in designing the product, you had to render it into AutoCAD and develop a paper plan with directions. Then you had to write a book that told people how to build it.
So you have to be a designer?
Yes.
Which requires a lot of creativity. And you have to have a computer background?
Yes.
And this was 50 years ago?
No.
Sorry. How many years ago?
This was 25 years ago.
Okay. Still a significant amount of time in the computer world.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We used AutoCAD. AutoCAD mm-hmm. was new at that particular time.
Right.
We started in 93, thereabouts. And I had a young man by the name of Kelly Kruger, and he was a design engineer, and he came to me to do something, and I said, well, Kelly, why don't you help me design all these pieces of furniture? And for 25 years, he did all the drawings, and they were perfect, just perfect. So people built furniture all over the United States from plans that we had designed. And once the concept grew, some of the most famous woodworkers in America reached out. And our catalog at that particular time was 68 pages long. So it's a big catalog.
Mm-hmm.
And it had some of the most famous names in American woodworking in the front of it. Gary Knox Bennett, who was just an amazing guy, and he just passed away, unfortunately, here about 3 months ago. Michael Dunbar is the Dean of American Windsor Chairs at the George Washington Mount Vernon. There are 30 chairs on the porch, and they were all done by Michael Dunbar. His accolades and recognition is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He and I are about the same age, so he's semi-retired now. Our brochure read like Who's Who in American Woodworking. And that's one of the things that actually helped us become number three in the United States.
Wow. The Who's Who on your catalog?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. They were famous and notorious. Wow. And some of them were really notorious.
So your catalog... And when you say catalog, when I was a kid, we would get this giant book from the Sears Roebuck company.
Hey, everybody loved it.
Yes, because you could buy everything and anything. Literally, you could buy a house from the Sears catalog. It would be shipped to your destination or your location, and you could find a contractor or you just build it yourself, literally, out of a Sears catalog. Did you have any of your items in the Sears catalog?
No, that concept, we didn't go that far, because ours was, we were paper merchants.
Mm-hmm.
We sold woodworking plans that told people how to do it in their hobby shop or in their big shop.
So you were doing your own style of Sears catalog, only it was American Furniture Design Company.
Right, absolutely, absolutely.
Awesome.
And it was really funny that it grew so big. That it became, for me, after 25 years, it became almost time to sell. Because I was not tired of it. It was just that I had reached a point where I no longer had the tremendous passion to continue. I had too many people and too many problems, and life went on.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided, well, we'd sell it. Well... The plan business was extremely competitive at that particular time.
But you were still third in the country.
Yes. Which was good. Which meant I thought I would do well when I tried to sell it. Well, our American plan companies were a bunch of bandits. They went, aha, we will try. And I gave them a price to start with, which was, I thought was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And they all wheedled and connived and did all kinds of unusual shenanigans that made me very disappointed. And there's a company called Lee Valley Tools in Canada. They have 25 stores. They have a worldwide presence. And I had talked to Lee about it, the owner, and he said, well, he says, I'm really busy right now. Call me back in 3 months. And I said, well, here's the price. He said, okay, call me back in 3 months. So all the rest of the guys were doing unusual negotiations, and finally I just threw up my hands and said, that's it. I'll just keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and 3 months later, I called Lee, and I said, Lee, do you still have any interest? Oh, yeah, I do. And I said, here's the price. And he says, well, let me call you back tomorrow. And he bought it.
Wow. Congratulations. Just like that. He saw the value.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're really big. Mm-hmm. They have international presence now. And they sell our woodworking plans all over the world.
So I want to go back, if anyone was listening that was about to sell their business, what things could you share with them to look out for?
That's difficult to respond to because every sale is independent. Every sale stands on its own.
Mm-hmm.
It has its virtues, which is money, cash flow, people. And people are key to any sale of any business that you have.
Sure.
Because the people are actually the engine that makes things work.
Mm-hmm.
And if the engine isn't running on all eight cylinders, if you have disgruntled employees, that can be a real problem to somebody who's trying to buy your business.
Mm.
I didn't have that, thank God. The other thing is you have to negotiate your sale. Sometimes there are cash sales, which are really great. Other times there are financed sales over a year, 16 months, or 24 months. There's interest that needs to be considered during that time if you're going to finance it. You need to be dealing with a company who is reputable and is not going to steal your business and not pay you back out of the contract.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of hard to read sometimes because shenanigans and people do bad things whether you are aware of it or not.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to be very careful during the sale, and you need to do your homework. You need to know who you're selling to. There's nothing unusual to do a financial check
mm-hmm.
on them before you make the deal. And you need to have, let me back up just a little bit. Sometimes it helps to have legal counsel
mm-hmm.
in that decision.
Yes.
Because they can.
I would strongly suggest to have legal counsel.
Absolutely.
During that time.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing when you live in this town long enough, you have enough good friends in the legal side that can counsel and guide you.
Truly.
Yeah.
So you sell your business, and now what? What did you do to occupy your time?
Well, we always had Murphy's Fine Woodworking, and I always did commission work. My first project was 1980. And today, I keep a record of every piece that I have made and who it went to, a description of the piece. And right now, we're at a little over 350 custom pieces that have been made in decorated homes throughout the Southern California. There's uh-huh. also, well, I shouldn't say Southern California. Muncie, Pennsylvania is the furthest that we have done a commission. There's a lot of stuff spread throughout the United States right now.
Mm-hmm.
We did a 24-piece project for a couple up in Valley Center.
Mm-hmm.
And it took 9 months of intense work with a multitude of people. And as a matter of fact, their house was on a piece of property that my wife and I were going to buy because we were going to build a home in Valley Center. Well, they made a better deal and built a better house. But eventually, he was involved in the computer industry and tech stuff. Mm-hmm. They sold and moved to Washington. So in one of the islands off the coast, I have a 24-piece showroom that John and Susan easily show to all their friends and brag about. The and those folks I call patrons.
Mm-hmm.
In my business, that's really important. And there are four patrons who live in this community that have just become good friends. And I had a girl visit one of them the other day, and I got an email from her, and she said, "Brian, you should feel so proud that I was in the Murphy Museum last night." Because there's, about 12 pieces there.
Yeah, that's so wonderful.
It's fun. It's still fun. And mm-hmm. That's really important.
What are your favorite pieces to create? Do you like?
My chairs.
Uh-huh.
We build four different Morris chairs. And it's our rendition of the Morris chairs. They're modern. They have a nice look to them. And I've had the opportunity to teach back east at a couple of woodworking schools. And the first thing people say, "We love your chairs." And there's a whole bunch of them now.
Well, they are beautiful.
And they're very comfortable, too. They're adjustable. And you can sit in one of our chairs, read a book, and have a glass of wine, and take a nap. That's a good chair.
I love all those things. Tell me about your journey. Like, when you are working on a design, or you're working on a chair or a bed, or even a baby cradle, looks like you do baby cradles.
The first baby cradle I made was for my grandson.
Mm-hmm.
My grandson is 27 now. There have been other cradles made. And when you make a cradle, it has to be perfect. There's stories about people that, to make them rock, they don't have motors in them. I have a customer that I did one for that tied a string on his foot, and the cradle was across the bedroom, and he would wiggle his foot to make the cradle rock. That's a true story.
I believe it.
One of the requirements of a Murphy cradle is that when I deliver it, the child's name, full name, and date of birth is on the bottom of the cradle. And as new additions are made, mm-hmm. that's passed down. Well, the cradle that we made for my family only has three names on it, and it now resides in Albuquerque, New Mexico. But I will share an amazing story, though. Joe's Italian restaurant here mm-hmm. in town, my favorite place to eat.
Sure.
Good Italian family. When Barrett was born, he is now early 20s, mid-20s, give mm-hmm. or take a little bit. So his name is the first name on the bottom of the cradle. Guess how many names are on the bottom of the cradle today?
Well, they're Italian, right?
Right.
Okay.
Nine.
Oh,
nine names on the bottom of that cradle.
Wow.
And they are so proud of it. They're just waiting to start the next recycle
sure.
with grandkids.
Oh, wow. So what really, an heirloom.
Yeah, it is.
What a wonderful heirloom. Just telling that story brings back the importance of fine furniture.
Yes. It
just brings back that true craftsmanship.
We like to think that we do that the very best.
Yeah.
We do true mortise and tenon joints.
Tell me, what does that mean?
It's a joint that the one part of the wood has like a tongue on it, and the other part of the wood has a hole in it. And the pieces go in like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it locks it forever.
Wow.
So that joint will never come apart. Never. There are no screws in the stuff that we do.
That is extraordinary.
So it's what you pay for. It's
sure.
what you pay for. You can go to IKEA and get your instruction book out, and you can screw everything together, and you can kick it, thump it, and in 6 months it'll fall apart.
Sure.
You'll never have that experience with Murphy's Fine Woodworking.
How do you think we'll keep that alive?
Oh, there. In my industry, mm-hmm. there are not thousands of people like me in California, but there are a multitude of folks who build beautiful furniture. Nancy and I have sponsored a show at the Escondido Art Partnership called Wood, a Furniture Show. We hosted it for 15 years.
Wow. When does that happen?
It's in January of every year.
Okay.
The San Diego Fine Woodworking Association, which is the largest woodworking club in America, is based in San Diego. Their show, which I always participated in either as a sponsor, or since we sold the business, I no longer sponsor, so they have allowed me to enter. So after 35 years, I get to put something in the San Diego Fine Woodworking Show. But back to the wood. Uh-huh. Our show this year had 78 pieces of amazing furniture. It was stunning. When you walked into the EAP, all you saw was this beautiful furniture. So there are 78 craftsmen within 100 or 150 mile radius of this town.
That's surprisingly who do what I do. A lot of people.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. The craft still exists and lives well.
It's probably a great part because of what you've done every year with your event in January.
Well, we like to think that that helps, but there is the San Diego Fine Woodworking Association has about 1,400 members.
Oh.
And their show in June at the Del Mar Fair draws from people all over the world. So it has a good magnetism for Southern California, and it causes things to happen.
Mm.
And guys and gals like me, and there are a lot of women now in the woodworking industry, make a living out of that.
Wow, and that's great.
People accept really beautiful furniture.
I have a tiny farm, and every time I grow something, I just marvel at what comes from a little tiny seed and how many people you could feed from one little tiny seed. I would imagine it's the same with woodworking. You take something raw and you create something incredibly gorgeous, beautiful, and timeless. Becomes an heirloom if you're lucky. That must have some kind of effect on your mental health.
You hit the nail on the head. And speaking of gardens, mine is in now. It's doing well.
Yay.
Yeah, and it's about, tomatoes are about this tall. We use a natural resource, wood.
Yes.
And wood is so varied and so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a lot of work with cherry, which is one of my favorite woods. We do a lot with walnut. And I have found curly maple to be amazing properties. They are just stunning.
What is curly maple?
It's like your hair. The definition of the curls are in the wood.
Huh.
And it's just gorgeous. It's a natural resource.
Mm-hmm.
It's like your garden.
Yes.
It just grows and grows. On the East Coast and in Central America, where lots of trees are, wood is plentiful. In Southern California and San Diego, there are three different hardwood suppliers. So they bring their wood from all over the United States. Comes out of Washington, Oregon, comes out of Indiana, mid-states, and then comes out of Connecticut, New Hampshire, New Jersey, upper New York state.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the southern states produce a lot of the oaks. But here, do we have anything that grows other than oranges and avocados?
Well, some would say palm trees everywhere.
Right, right.
I've got a lot of eucalyptus.
And that's easy wood to work with.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Mm-hmm. It's not bad. But it's not as gorgeous as the other guys and gals.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. And what is your, do you have a favorite? Do you have a top 10? What's your favorite wood?
I love cherry. I'm doing a lot of work right now in white oak and red oak. The next project up is cherry and curly maple.
What makes them your favorite?
Well, some are hard to work with. White oak is like... you know, remember the boat that was called Old Ironside during the Revolutionary War, War?
Yes.
It was America's battleship.
Okay.
And it fought the English, and the English were shooting their cannons at it, and the balls were bouncing off the hull.
Wow.
And the reason that it was because it was American white oak. And they called it Old Ironside.
I see.
And that vessel from the 1700s still exists today.
Okay, so I understand it's just incredibly dense.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's okay. Really hardwood.
I'm sure it depends on what you're creating, right?
Well, absolutely, and it depends on the customer's preference because they have the ability to make the decision. Mm-hmm. I make recommendations,
sure.
And I supply them examples,
mm-hmm.
and they make the pick. As a wood hoarder, I'm sorry, I am. I had a friend of mine, his name was Charlie Johnson, and Larry Kimmel used to call him the boxmaker of San Diego. He made boxes for doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, presidents, governors, and a multitude of other famous people. My family has a bunch of those jewelry boxes.
Wow.
But Charlie liked me. Mm. He was a Bataan Death March survivor. He was an amazing woodworker. And he collected exotic woods.
Mm.
And in the top shelf in our storage rack is a lot of Charlie Johnson's amazing wood. And some of them are 4 to 5 inches thick.
Mm. What defines an exotic wood?
Something that is rare, and it's like some of the mahoganies, you can't get anymore. They have bands on them. You can't cut the trees. There's probably about 3 or 4 that are now no longer imported into the United States. That was before Charlie Johnson got some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very fortunate to have some of them. And I have had them for years. I have not found the perfect project to put those expensive, beautiful pieces of wood into action.
Wow.
And I hope I live long enough to be able to figure that out.
I think it'll come to you just like everything else.
I'm sure it will.
Yes.
I'm sure it will.
So, getting back to Joe's Italian.
Yes.
They've been around for a really long time for a very good reason.
He's good.
Because he's delicious. Oh, my gosh. The sauce and the pasta and the lasagna.
And not only that, but they're amazing people.
Yes.
They are gracious, loving. They reach out to the community. Both his daughters are involved in, well, Adina has her own business, which
incredibly talented young lady.
Yeah. Regardless of who you are, when you walk in there, you are welcomed,
mm-hmm.
and chatted to. It's just an amazing restaurant. My wife would die to have all his sauce recipes.
She's probably not the only one.
Right.
Yes. They love to feed you.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
And I love to eat.
Yes, I love to feed people and I love to eat as well.
Do you ever make beef Wellingtons?
I have never made beef Wellington.
Really?
Have you?
I will leave you, when I leave, with an amazing recipe.
Okay.
And if you try it, you will just go, oh, Brian, thank you so much.
Okay. Wow. I'm going to hold you to that.
It's right here.
Oh,
I brought
perfect.
It with me.
Okay. So tell me about your beef Wellington.
It's an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a while to make a really good beef Wellington. And I haven't made one for a while. You need a really great piece of beef. And
what is your beef, your choice?
Well, the easy way to do it is Costco.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you remember those 1.5, 2-inch steaks that New York strips that they used to have? And you
sure.
get 4 for maybe $35, $40.
Oh, yeah. Right. Those numbers are long gone.
They're $70 now.
Yes.
Nancy came home the other day, and she says, guess what? I bought at Costco. And
oh,
I looked at it and said, oh, they look delicious.
Mm.
The New York strips work well, but you need to cut them up. They need to be seared first, get a little brown.
Mm-hmm.
Then you coat them with Trader Joe's brown mustard.
Mm-hmm.
And you need some either ham or similar type product. You need mushrooms, and you cut them up, and then you cook them until the moisture is gone. And then you need an amazing frozen pastry that you roll out. You take the mushrooms, and you take the ham, and you lay the piece of meat on top, and then you wrap them gently together, and then you put them in the bread, and you roll that, coat it with beaten eggs so that it does its thing in the oven.
Sure.
And you put it in the oven, and you cook it to about 130, which is like medium rare. And they are delicious. And you have enough for two, plus you will have some small leftovers.
It sounds delicious.
Yeah, it really is.
Making my mouth water.
And it's fun to do, too.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Well, it's on my list to do. I'll be letting you know how well it turned out or how well it didn't turn out. Worst case, if I don't succeed, it could be a pot pie. You have been in business for a very long time, successfully.
Yes.
What made you stay in business? Because the hardest thing in business is staying successful and staying in the black.
Well, that's a challenge. It's like life.
Truly.
Life has ups and downs. A business has ups and downs.
Mm.
It's driven by the economy. My business is discretionary income because I'm expensive. People need to want my product. And you need to continually, as a businessman or businesswoman, you need to be in front of the community all the time. And you need to, when appropriate, you need to donate your time and you need to donate your product.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be involved and reached out. When you do that, people who are aware of who you are, and you need to be talking about not who you are, but what you represent and what you can do. And in business, the worst word that you can use is the word I.
Agreed.
It has to be we. It has to always be we. And those people that live in the world of I fail.
Mm-hmm.
They do. And if you learn that little lesson out of this conversation, it's really important.
That's great advice and a great reminder.
One of the really important aspects as a business person, if you talk less and listen more, you will be amazed at what happens because you give the potential customer the opportunity to tell you what they want. And you don't tell them what you think they want, because eventually they're going to tell you what they really want.
And that's the best way to keep a customer.
Right, absolutely.
Thank you, Brian. This has been a delight.
Thank you very much, Deanna.
I have had a wonderful time learning about your journey. I hope you come back and we do a part two, because I feel like there's more to talk about.
Oh, I would be more than happy to do that.
Okay,
wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure. I'll see you next time.
Okay, thank you.
You.